Time now for Playing Politics, this partnership between WCCO Radio and the Star Tribune. Scott Gillespie and John Rash are here from the Star Tribune. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Let's start in St. Paul. John, let's start with you. It was an emotional night last night in the Senate on police reform. You had Democrats speaking out forcefully, including African-Americans, Bobby Joe Champion, Jeff Hayden saying enough is enough. We need to get something done. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka was pushing back. Many people saying it was about as passionate and raw as they have seen. What are your thoughts on what took place last night? And in the end, what, if anything, will come out when we're talking specifically on police reform from the special session?
Well, the transcendent issue, of course, is what happened with George Floyd, the fiery protests and peaceful demonstrations and moves for reformation that followed. That's by far the most important issue, but always involved when you have a legislative session, especially a special session, especially one that goes into the wee hours of the morning, are procedural dynamics. And there was a lot of pushback in terms of how many of the aforementioned legislators from the DFL side thought that the Republican majority did not bring them into the discussions on something that they considered so profoundly important. And so part of it was simply the continual disconnect between the two parties in St. Paul. The good news for those who are looking for some kind of progress on the issue is there doesn't seem to be any difference between the DFL and the Republicans in terms of the importance of this issue. Sometimes, as you know, Chad and Scott, we get to special sessions or we get to the regular legislative session, and the two parties are not even on the same page as to what should be being discussed, let alone how to try to solve it. Here, there's no question that this is a big issue and an important one. Movement, probably certainly not as much as the DFL hopes eventually will be there, but that's standard politics. So at least they're moving collectively in the right direction on the right issue.
All right, Scott, part of the dialogue when it was contentious was involving Senator Patricia Torres-Ray and the Majority Leader Paul Gazelka. Gazelka responding to some of the criticism, and some of this has been championed by the bicameral People of Color and Indigenous Caucus. Gazelka first responded saying, hey, for a number of years, Democrats had the House, Senate, Governor. Why didn't you get something done? He also suggested, I think for me, in a very tone-deaf way, there's no need for him to consult with members of the People of Color and Indigenous Caucus because of this. I did go to inner city Minneapolis and St. Paul five or six times because I wanted to talk to people, everyday people, all colors, to get their perspectives. And when I think about people of color, Indigenous, I'm thinking about the people down there. We went to talk to dozens of people from the Black community and asked them directly. And I was surprised they said they really haven't talked much to their own senators. Torres responded, Scott, that's as if I said, if something happens in rural Minnesota, I will selectively go to some place in rural Minnesota and ask people. I don't need to consult with rural members that are here because why would I? I think she's right on this point. I enjoy having Gazelka on. We had times go back and forth pretty strong. But just to say you went down there and talked to five or six people on an issue that affects, well, in an issue that affects 300 million of us in this country and obviously 4 or 5 million people in the state, in particular African-Americans, and to say, Scott, well, I talked to five or six people, so why would I talk to you? I think it's fairly insulting.
I think it's insulting, and I think it does nothing to further the legislation or the idea that serious reform will be done. So, yes, I completely agree with you, Chad. Not the best way for Senator Gazelka to handle a situation. And, you know, we've got the one split legislature in the country, and we keep seeing that. And this is another example of it. And they don't, if they don't want to talk to each other, work together, we're not going to get very far on issues that are so important and as critical as this one.
John, when this started last Friday, Paul Gazelka said, we're out of here on Friday. We need more time to deal with some of these issues. We can't resolve all of it. Tim Walz, the governor, has said the opposite, saying this is our one opportunity. We can't waste it. And if we need to, we should stay weeks and weeks. Is this going to end on Friday, John?
I think that there's a good chance it will end on Friday, and there's probably as good a chance that the governor could call them back in after that. So I think that, you know, it's a little bit of gamesmanship going on here, but neither side should be playing games. If we rewind a little bit, I think it also shows the merits of trying to get the legislative business done within the regular session. These special sessions are fraught with challenges, including it's hard to come up with a specific agenda that they're going to follow. And there's no, you know, once they're called, there isn't a specific end time that the governor can necessarily control it at that point. He can, of course, call them into session. So, you know, one would hope that there is room for compromise, again, on this shared objective of trying to move forward on this incredibly important issue that's convulsed the country. But then again, we've seen so many times with the Minnesota legislature, and as Scott correctly points out, the split between the DFL and the Republicans, which is unique to this state right now of all 50, it would suggest that getting to that compromise is not going to be easy.
Scott, I could see a scenario that John laid out where Gazelka gavels him out, Walz brings him back, and Gazelka does the same exact thing, where
yes,
they don't even meet. They just basically go through the process saying we're back, and then he just gavels them right out. Or would Walz even do that if he believes that Gazelka is just going to, okay, you can compel me to go back, but I'm just telling you, we're going to gavel right out, and I'm not even going to have the folks show up to even be in St. Paul to do this.
Well, he might still do that if he thinks that politically that's going to be damaging to the GOP Senate. And it could be. I think there's a lot of impetus for some police reform. And I think that you hear it and see it among moderate Minnesotans. I think you see it among suburbanites as well as those in the two urban centers. And, you know, those are sometimes the swing votes and some of the swing districts as well that matter to the state Senate. And if the governor's calculation is that Senator Gazelka, by playing that kind of, you know, strategy, is going to, you know, actually hurt himself in the long run electorally, I could see him doing it.
That's a really good point, John. The election is not that far away. You know, the governor's not up. But in November, a lot of folks can be on the ballot. And if you're lock in step with Democrats, we know where you're going to stand on this issue. If you're locked in step with Republicans, but there's still a lot of people in this state who will switch ballot voting. And the numbers are overwhelming on wanting police reform. It's which particular police reforms and how soon do they happen. I don't see any scenario, John, where the Republicans want to come out of here with nothing. But if they just come out with areas that have been discussed and that don't seem significant and different, how vulnerable do you think Republicans are coming out of that type of surrounding? Or that scenario, excuse me.
It certainly may not help them, but the Republicans are also going to try to pivot in the general election and make it a referendum on Governor Walz, even though you correctly say that he's not on the ballot. He isn't, but his agenda is, in his response to COVID-19 clearly is in campaign 2020. And they're going to try to focus on that and people's frustration on the pace of reopening, especially compared to neighboring states. And this generally might play well in some of the stronger Republican districts in greater Minnesota at this point. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what agenda is transcendent as we go into the November election, meaning there, of course, is the presidential election. And to the degree that Vice President Biden is leading in this state, which polls have indicated and is the likely outcome since the state hasn't gone Republican since 1972, that the Democrats are going to try to nationalize this. And conversely, the Republicans, who realize they may not have a winning hand, with President Trump in this state, albeit he certainly came close in 2016, they may try to make it more of a referendum on the DFL and on the governor. And so whichever of those two narratives take deeper root will say a whole lot about the makeup of the next legislative session, because, of course, all the state Senate and state representatives are up on the ballot this year as well.
Yeah, they're up on the ballot this year. Let's do this. Let's pause here. I want to come back. I want to start with Scott and talk about John Bolton's book, what it means, and how the White House is trying to stop us from seeing it, or maybe even a better way to say it, stop John Bolton from making money on his book. Plain Politics continues in a matter of minutes. In today's Star Tribune, former senator and former mayor of St. Paul, Norm Coleman, was very critical. Jacob Fry, previous mayors R.T. Ryback and Betsy Hodges, and the present city council, and others who are in favor to defund the police. We are going to play a conversation which we recorded with Norm just a little bit before the show. We'll play that at 2:35 next hour. John Bolton is former national security advisor for President Trump. He has been a Republican hawk for decades and decades. He left the White House, left on his own, of course, as the president normally does. He said he fired him. He has a book out. The book, news of the book came out when the impeachment hearings were taking place. Many of us thought this was the right time for Bolton, instead of waiting for the book to make the millions, speak up and provide some clarity. You're a firsthand witness. Do it. And Bolton played games and it never happened. The book now is out, and our timing is perfect here, Scott and John, because Peter Baker from the New York Times just moments ago put out a story on the book. Let me give you just a couple, two graphs here. Bolton describes several episodes of the president expressed willingness to halt criminal investigations to, in effect, give personal favors to dictators he liked, citing cases involving major firms in China and Turkey. The pattern looked like obstruction of justice as a way of life, which we couldn't accept, Bolton writes, adding that he reported his concerns to the Attorney General, William Barr. Bolton also asked a striking new allegation by saying that Trump overtly linked trade negotiations to his political fortunes by asking President Xi of China to buy a lot of American agricultural products to help him win farm states in this year's election. Mr. Trump, he writes, was pleading with Xi to ensure he'd win. He stressed the importance of farmers and increased Chinese purchases of soybeans and wheat in the electoral outcome. Scott, on that, those allegations, which to me are striking to say the least, and also this lawsuit where the Justice Department is saying that Bolton breached a contract he signed of employment, and their basic way is they're saying the book's going to get out, but we want to stop Bolton from making any money. So both those areas, when you hear about what Bolton writes and this attempt to take money away from Bolton.
Well, I think it's a way to, first of all, that's a, the lawsuit is just a way to, for Trump and his supporter, to appeal to his supporters by discrediting Bolton completely and discrediting everything he writes. As for what the book contains, what you gave me from the Peter Baker story is news to me. I've seen some of that on Twitter in the last hour. But, yeah, very important if it goes into great detail on how the president stepped into other criminal investigations and was strictly motivated by politics in those cases. I don't know how much of a difference it makes come November, because we seem locked in to a certain extent with the Trump base. There's so much news right now with the pandemic, with race relations in this country. I don't know what the American attention span is for details of John Bolton's
yep.
book. But I hope that people pay attention to it. It sounds like it's going to be significant.
John, let me give you more, and then you chime in. Mr. Trump didn't seem to know, for example, according to Bolton, that Britain is a nuclear power. He asked if Finland is a part of Russia. This is from John Bolton, ladies and gentlemen. This is not Bernie Sanders. This is John Bolton. He came closer to withdrawing the U.S. from NATO than previously known. Even top advisors who position themselves as unswervingly loyal mock him behind his back. During Trump's 2018 meeting with North Korean's leader, according to the book, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo slipped Bolton a note, disparaging the president, saying he's so full of fill in the blank. Will people who are open to who they're voting for pay close attention to this book, John? For put aside the Trump folks who, no matter what, it doesn't matter, they won't believe it, fake news, and the folks who no chance they'd vote for him anyway, but the folks who are uncertain, maybe longtime Republicans who are troubled by his comments, troubled by his behavior, but philosophically still are Republicans, how do you think this will affect them?
Well, even if it affects a portion of them, that might be enough to tilt a close election towards Vice President Biden. And, you know, there's the publishing process and publishing product of this. Very quickly on the process, there's the lawsuit that has been brought by the administration. It's not prior restraint. They realize they can't stop the book from coming out. That goes all the way back to the Pentagon Papers. They're trying to discredit and disincentivize both John Bolton and others from doing this by trying to take away his money. That should not be a concern to the American people in terms of how that suit comes out. I concur with the critics who think that it was fundamentally wrong and a disservice to the nation that he has claimed to be so committed to not testify during the impeachment trial when he had been invited by Democrats. And quickly on that, some will say, well, he wasn't subpoenaed. They realized rightly in the House of Representatives that that would take an extraordinarily long court case and it would not fit within the impeachment narrative. The most and singularly really the important dynamic of this is the product of the book, is the information. And it's quite damning. If you think about the impeachment process, this was about the President of the United States turning to a foreign government to help him in his reelection campaign. Well, that's fundamentally the same charge that Mr. Bolton is making against President Trump in terms of him directly appealing to Xi Jinping of China to buy more agricultural products because he knows he needs that to help him where he's more vulnerable in the farm country compared to 2016 because of the decline of those purchases. So that's an extraordinary charge by someone so high up in the Trump administration. And so, yes, I think enough people will pay attention that it certainly isn't going to help the president. They'll do everything they can to discredit him. But again, if it peels away even just a small part of people who are independents or people who are on the fence, it has a direct political impact.
Gentlemen, good stuff. Thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Chad.
Scott and John from the Star Tribune, Plain Politics, be available to you, StarTribune.com. And if you missed any of it, go to radio.com, get the app, hit the rewind feature, you can go right back to it.